Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch. In a week when the Queen was reported as saying that there needs to be less talk and more action on the environment. And then the very next day, Manchester United decided that it was appropriate to fly from Manchester to Leicester in a fit of crass self-importance. Of course, the Queen's green credentials are not impeccable. Despite being 95, she doesn't have a bus pass and indeed is one of the few pensioners that own their own train.
There's also a week in which Steve Bruce contemplated retirement for a moment before referencing the ill-advised Bond comeback of Sean Connery by saying, "Never say never, I've learnt that." To which the world at large replied, "No, time to die."
In other environmental news, and is there any other sort these days, competitors from 32 countries flew into Tarragona to take part in the inaugural Balloon World Cup, organised by Gerard Piquet. It's basically keeping uppy in a custom-made living room of 26 feet by 26 feet, including chairs, lamps, and most pleasingly, a small car, possibly the small car, that delivers the ball to the kickoff, thereby improving the game of football.
Delivers the balloon. Yeah.
Peruvian Francesco de la Cruz won the final, beating Germany's Jan Spice. The only thing that really bothered me about that whole thing was there wasn't a telly in this pretend living room. The whole point of keeping uppy with a balloon at home is the risk. It's the jeopardy of breaking something.
Breaking the telly. A friend of yours once break a vase playing air cricket?
Yes.
Without a bat or a ball.
Yes, that's right. And famously, of course, the thing about not having a telly, as my son Harvey's friend at school said, "What do you mean you haven't got a telly? What do you point the furniture at?"
Anyway, before we turn our attention to the Lambos and Maseratis in the Premier League showroom, a quick look at the failed MOT checklist for the rusty Ford Anglia that is the very bottom of the EFL. This week, the media profile of Oldham Athletic's plight, so far a pretty parochial affair, went up a gear or two. There's a piece in the new 442 magazine, and last Saturday, Oldham were featured on Football Focus. Alex Scott introduced the segment in front of a giant graphic of the club badge from the season before last. It's a good start. We've had two badges since the menacing Great Big Owl face, but still. For once, the BBC decided to forego the shots of mills and chimneys and the Hovis music, short of time, I guess, kicked off with shots of great moments from the very early 90s, with heroes like Holden, Marshall, Palmer, Milligan, Ritchie and Royal set to some jolly Inspiral Carpets.
Oh.
They're called an Oldham band, the Inspiral Carpets, even though only the lead singer, Graham Lambert, is actually an Oldham fan, apparently. When we won the second division with the last kick of the season in 91, the Carpets were playing in East Germany. And as Lambert came off stage, his roadie wandered over and said, "Hey, your cunts won the league." Noel Gallagher. So our last success predates the entirety of Noel Gallagher's career.
That is incredible, isn't it? Which is now presumably over, isn't it? do you remember a band called the Milltown Brothers, isn't it? Whether you do, they were once interviewed and they were asked what the most northern thing they'd ever done was. And the lead singer said, "I killed my brother's kestrel."
Very good. Anyway, that In Spiral Carpet's tale is in Mike Keegan's book, This Is How It Feels, about Oldham's glory years. We had two. I enjoyed it, but I'm exactly its target audience, of course. Keegan was one of the talking heads on Focus, with some more mournful music behind and shots of lowering clouds over the floodlights, talking about apathy, accepting mediocrity, and just wanting a club to be proud of again. We saw the clown and coffin protest that was a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, yes.
And we heard Nedim Onua, who grew up in Oldham, apparently, talking in general terms for about 8 seconds about what the club meant to the people of the town. A lot, I guess, is the summary there. Martin Keown just sat there rather disappointedly. I was hoping he'd start banging on about the mezzanine, which he did last time I watched Football Focus. Tried to catch Dion Dublin at, because he's a property programme
guy. Yes.
And Dion Dublin said he'd never heard the mezzanine used in a football context before. Obviously hasn't seen Bostock's Cup.
Yes, anyway, absolutely.
The clowns themselves, the owners, declined to appear. They were busy. Those baggy pantaloons don't iron themselves, you know. But they did issue a mealy-mouthed statement claiming to have taken every action possible to ensure the club remains in a financially healthy and solvent position. Interesting use of remains there. But it's a shame then that was undermined a couple of days later by a new EFL charge for non-payment of transfer fees, which is staggering because we can't think what player they've actually paid money for. But we're under a transfer embargo. So this must be a transfer from years and years ago that they still haven't paid off. But anyway, on the field, the once famous sloping pitch, we won one, surprisingly, and lost one, rather less so. And somehow, there are now two teams below us, Scunthorpe and Carlisle. Mm. Can we declare now or something?
Yeah. And Sutton have gone all the way up, haven't we? Sutton won, below you.
They won, yeah, and they were bottom, and they won four games in a row, and they're in the playoff zone.
Yeah, yeah.
Or near there.
Well, we'll have to go up to the Premier League very briefly, won't we?
And well, we will, yeah. I mean, and actually, at the top of the league, well, nearly the top, you know, I actually went to Arsenal Palace on Monday night.
Wow.
My friend had a spare season ticket. It was good. It's a terrific stadium. It's a great view and everything.
Mm. And nice and quiet.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of grumbling, but, I mean, there's not a bad view in the place unless you're low down behind the goal and you want to sit down, because there seemed to be some sort of safe standing trial going on down there. But Arsenal looked pretty lucky to get a draw, I thought. And why doesn't Arteta want to play Aubameyang and Lacazette together? Because Aubameyang, you didn't notice him at all. Then Lacazette comes on and suddenly, oh, someone to play with. And they play off each other really well. Palace looked decent, I thought.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, Watford discovered that there was no new manager bounce, losing 5-0 at home in a game that featured a brilliant solo goal by Mo Salah. And the only thing that's going to stop it being goal of the month is his other goal against City.
Or unless Ronaldo scores a goal.
Yeah, well, just scores a tap-in, yeah. Mm. I mean, I think this one might be even better. I mean, he's good, isn't he, Mo Salah? They've started talking about him being the best in the world, which, you know. But you know what I wonder? Is he really Premier League Player of the Month material?
Clearly not.
He's scored in 9 straight games, but, you know, Ronaldo, he's got to be favourite.
Yeah, he has,
you know?
Really, hasn't he? Yeah.
And Ranieri is already second in the sack race betting.
On 606, Chris Sutton actually said, is Ranieri's job at risk? This was half an hour after the game had finished. And so, after his 1,000th match in charge, as a manager, Steve Bruce is deemed surplus to requirements by a board who wouldn't be able to pick out Peter Beardsley in a lineup. Mind you, given the human rights issues, that's probably good news for Peter.
Well, very good news. I mean, I suppose it remains to be seen whether Newcastle will get a new manager bounce. I mean, they certainly didn't get a controversial new ownership with distinctly iffy human rights record bounce.
No.
They struggled, didn't they? They scored early on, blown along by a brisk gust of euphoria, but then they gradually set about easing Harry Kane back into form.
Which is very good of them.
Yeah, very good in a way, yeah. It was interesting to see Anton Deck there. Did you see them?
Yes, I did.
They were there in the posh seats, sitting at the feet of the new Saudi chairman. Or maybe they were on the same level, just you know, much shorter.
And much the most knowledgeable about football in the director's role. And that's not to say that they're not knowledgeable about football. I'm sure that they are.
No, it's just that it's a low bar.
It's a low bar.
I was fascinated to see in the first half they were sat Ant and Deck, which is their faintly sort of psychotic trademark, that they'll always be on the left.
I never
Deck
knew
on the
that.
Right. Yeah, when they're presenting, Ant on the left, Deck on the right, it's how you can tell them apart. But in the second half, they'd switch seats, which was unnerving.
Oh.
And how are we supposed to tell them apart? You know, it's just one bloke with a huge forehead like Mr. Worf and a 14-year-old boy. you know.
That's bizarre. That must have frightened the players. I mean, of course, the fact that the board know very little about football doesn't make the decision to sack Bruce wrong, but it does mean that the first lie is already told, because mutual consent, my arse.
Well, it's a way for him to leave with dignity and £8 million intact.
Well, there is that. I mean, it's mutual consent, and this is one for the youngsters, like Tony Blackburn and Tessa Wyatt splitting up. I dragged that up from a long, long way away.
Yeah, well, and mutual consent includes pretty much everyone, doesn't it? Like owners, Steve Bruce himself, the fans, pundits wanting to be proved right, bookies, passers-by with no actual interest in football, cabbages who've been getting way too much bad press lately. And he was, as you say, on 999 games when the Saudis took over, and then, like Elton John accidentally sitting on his piano, he managed to crack the grand.
Yeah, and much talk about Newcastle's ability to attract players to the North East. So Souness, well, first of all, Woodgate said, no, no players will want to go up there. Plenty of them went to China, I noticed.
Yeah.
And Souness said, why don't they move the training ground to London? Did you see that? That is what he said. And what I find really, really interesting is there's been all these column inches about how they're going to struggle to attract players, and not one of them has said, you know, maybe they'll object on moral grounds.
No, not at all, not
even mentioned.
No, which reminds me that, you know, at least Ant and Dec weren't wearing tea towels on their heads. Yes. I mean, what the hell's that about? I mean, you can't buy a black and white tea towel in Newcastle for love or money at the moment. Newcastle, brilliantly, I love the story, have asked their supporters not to dress up as Arabs anymore for fear of cultural inappropriateness, which I'm sure is going to, you know, hit them where they live, or causing offence to somebody, not the new owners.
No, they recognise
that the intention is positive, the intention is to welcome them, but, you know, somebody else, somebody, you know, oversensitive, somebody woke, maybe.
Yes.
So, in shorthand, they're totally pissed off.
Of course
the Saudis are totally pissed off that the Geordies are turning up with details on their heads.
They're basically looking at them like they in Only Fools and Horses when Rodney and Dell turned up as Batman and Robin at a funeral. It's a bit like that.
And, you know, you could tell from the phrase in this statement, which was the best bit, Middle East-inspired head covering. That means stop wearing the bloody tea towels.
Yeah, that's exactly what it means.
I mean, imagine if slumbering giant Riyad United was bought by the British Royal Family's investment fund and all the Saudis went around celebrating in bowler hats. And drinking cups of tea with their little finger sticking out, like the Brits on The Simpsons. I mean, that would get tired quickly, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, I have to say, we've said a lot about the moral elements and all that. And I just want to say, I like Newcastle. I want them to do well. I really do. But I worry for them. And I think they're going to struggle. And if they go down, they're going to lose players. And if they don't go back up, they're suddenly in a load of financial shit that the PIF can do nothing about. And it's going to be really tough for them if that happens.
Well, it is, I think, because they've had a bit of a bumpy week already. Because the new Newcastle owners said that their budget for the January transfer window is going to be £50 million. And there's been a lot of talk about how they can spend up to £190 million because Mike Ashley never spent anything.
Yeah.
But they said, we're only going to spend £50 million, you know, managing expectations maybe, inject a little realism, trying to cut down on nuisance calls from agents. But what's £50 million going to get you in today's market? Especially when you're calling up, hello, richest club in the world here, got any bargains?
Well, of course, that's a massive, massive, massive problem.
I mean, look at the Spurs game on that they were playing. It would get you Ndombele and nothing else.
Well, and the other thing is, it's October. And the transfer window is in January. So if they don't win any games in between, they are in massive trouble.
Well, yeah. And, you know, £50 million gets you two-thirds of Pepe, and he looked fucking hopeless on Monday night. You know, and Tarkowski, they're talking about, oh, we'll get Tarkowski from Burnley. Leicester asking £50 million for him last summer when Leicester were interested. Yeah. And the Barcelona teenager, Fati, has got a buyout in his contract. €1 billion is the buyout fair.
Yeah.
So £50 million, it's, you know, they might get one player, two players. It's not going to turn their fortunes around, I don't think.
You can't even win a double roller on Euro Millions and buy Fatty, can you?
And buy Fatty? No, you can't. Not that you
be
would
be tempted.
One Barcelona teenager. Where would you put him? In the shed?
You'd have him in the living room. Like, Fatty, move!
Yeah, you'd train him up to win the Balloon World Cup.
Hey, there's money to be made there, now you're thinking about it.
Oh, yeah. And another reason it's been a bumpy week for the Geordies' new tea-towel sporting overlords, the other 19 Premiership clubs, in a fit of pique, voted to ban shirt sponsorship directly by owners as a way of dumping more money into the budget, which is what Man City are always supposed to allegedly doing with their sponsorship by state-owned airline Etihad Airways. Yeah. And that's what Newcastle will ultimately do now with Saudi Airlines, which are owned by the Saudi state, unlike the Saudi Public Investment Fund, of course, which is completely
separate.
Independent. Yeah. And the plan originally was to have a new sponsorship deal, did you see this, with Vision 2030, which is Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's plan to move the Saudi economy away from a reliance on oil and state-sanctioned murder of dissenting journalists by the end of the decade.
But isn't Vision 2030 just bad eyesight? That's what it's at. I'm afraid you've got 2030 eyesight, mate.
It's very, very lopsided eyesight, isn't it?
You don't know.
But anyway, yeah, no, I mean, a lot of people saying, you know, now that Bruce has gone, it's important to get this appointment right. Or perhaps they should balls it up. What do you think? They're going to be able to take their pick, you'd think.
Well, there's been Martinez, Emery, Gerard, Fonseca, Eddie Howe, Lucien Favre, Frank Lampard, Wayne Rooney.
I mean, ominously, Jose Mourinho was saying this week that he's always had an emotional bond with
I saw that. Because he used to work with Bobby Robson.
Because Bobby Robson was his mentor, yeah. Newcastle sacked after finishing fifth.
I tell you, they need a safe pair of hands, and I tell you, it's available. Steve Bruce. That would be a hilarious thing, wouldn't it?
If they brought him back in.
Yeah.
You know, they've paid him off. But I've always had an emotional bond with Newcastle on account of the Likely Lads. You know, maybe I should put my name forward. What do you think? You know?
Yeah.
Especially that episode where they're trying not to find out the score of the England game before the highlights.
Exactly. I think Terry Bolam would make a great manager, wouldn't he?
James Bolam.
Terry. Yeah.
Do you remember Anton Deck remaking that?
Yes, I do.
Jesus, the nerve. You know, more brass neck than the statue of Ronaldo in Madeira.
Oh, thank God.
On we go. There was a little bit of Champions League this week.
It was a little bit.
You know, an opportunity to listen to commentators indulgently describing Diego Simeone as a character.
Yeah.
You know, ooh, there he goes, look, snarling, complaining about everything, getting in the referee's face, running off without shaking hands at the end. There's his team, look, throwing themselves to the floor, trying to get opponents booked and sent off, just like he used to do as a player. What a character.
Well, he is a character, but he's no Mohammed bin Salman.
And did you see the United comeback last night? Did you hear Robbie Savage at the end?
No.
He said, two words, Viva Ronaldo, good night. And then, brilliantly, it wasn't the end of the programme. And that sat there like a stinking turd for another 2 minutes.
Yes, while he was starting his car.
Yeah, I very much enjoyed that. So let's move on.
England.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Well, I must admit, it's hard to see a headline like England hit with stadium ban without thinking, oh, God, what have I done now?
It wasn't the first time.
Exactly. I thought nobody saw me having a piss behind the hot dog kiosk. But there was a queue, man. England, the footballing nation,
yes,
have been hit with a stadium ban by UEFA as a punishment for the disgraceful scenes at the European Championship final, mm-hmm, which you witnessed, if not participated in.
I did witness it, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a two-game ban with one of the games suspended and will only come into effect for a Nations League game next June. Yes. It's the same as the UEFA FIFA split
because,
with the Hungary ban.
Because for FIFA, it didn't happen because it wasn't a FIFA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't this seem... Given what it was like, the scenes that you saw, doesn't this seem incredibly lenient? I mean, and doesn't it make it difficult for the FA to complain about bans handed out to the likes of Hungary following their racist incidents? Which are serious, of course, but not quite on the same scale.
And when they say this won't affect England's bid for the 2030 World Cup.
I love that.
So what would affect England's bid for the 2030 World Cup?
Put David Cameron in charge. Would affect it.
That would affect it, yes.
If they got the wrong sort of crocodile skin designer handbags for the FIFA executive
wisemen. All of those.
Maybe if they just not pay them enough cash, non-sequential unmarked bills in an envelope that is insufficiently brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're corrupt, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I got it. I was with you 100%.
Well, you know, last time we tried to get 2018, didn't we? And it was Cameron against Putin. I mean, that was never going to work out.
No,
was it?
Not in any sporting contest whatsoever.
No, you'd want to see some of them.
Yeah,
the wrestling,
yeah.
The boxing, the horse racing. But we got two votes that time, and one of them was from the FA, and they were leaning towards Russia, apparently.
That's brilliant. You
know, and there was a fellow from the South American Football Federation, CONMEBOL, who said he'd give us his vote if we gave him a knighthood and named the FA Cup after him.
How fantastic! Yeah. That's brilliant.
The Sir Nicholas Leos Cup, it would have to be. Imagine if we'd done that and still only got three votes.
That would be
We'd
brilliant.
Be stuck with that. Yeah. I mean, he's dead now, so it'll probably
be okay. I also noticed that this week, because I'm Mr. Environment this week, that 2030 is a key date in the government's move towards environmental salvation.
Yes.
And yet they want to invite all of these countries over here and all of their fans and build new stadiums. And it doesn't seem to make any sense whatsoever.
No, well, and the Wembley Stadium, it's only built in 2007, but just not fit for purpose, clearly. It just couldn't cope. I mean, it's impossible to police properly for an event of that size, of the size of the European Championship final, because the stadium don't own the land around it.
No.
All the restaurants and flats and bars and shit. You can't, so you can't barricade it off. You can't form a barrier that is unbreakable,
no.
And that is policeable.
But the other thing is, and I was there, remember,
yeah.
It would have helped if they had people on the turnstiles.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's just the most bizarre thing. That people just going in behind people like the old days of the cop and yeah. pissing in each other's pockets and
or
things like that.
Trying to get on a train at Streatham Common Station. And
yes. And pleasingly, in December, they're going to have another meeting about the biennial World Cup, which is very depressing. And the only other thing I saw in international football was that all Qatar stadiums were designed by Albert Speer. Son of Albert Speer.
Albert Speer, my God. I mean, it's interesting the World Cup bid being a joint, you know, being jointly. You know why UEFA's leaning towards apparently a joint bid from Spain and Portugal? And why the joint bids? Because the bloody thing's going to have 48 teams with it and last for 2.5 months.
Yeah.
It's never mind whether it'll be every 2 years by then as well.
Yep.
It's just too much for one single country to handle.
Yeah, and if they have Ireland and UK, then you've got the Brexit problem.
Oh,
people
you've got
going
border.
Across
borders.
You've
border,
got a hard border.
Yes, hard border. Anyway, let's move on to another story. Something that caught my eye this week was a new piece of tech that was unveiled at Norwich City's Lotus Training Centre. I mean, it's called the SoccerBot 360. And how scary is that name?
It is.
I mean, doesn't it conjure up visions of a new future, of a near future, rather, in which Newcastle United's first team, because they'll be able to afford it first,
yeah.
are all 20-foot high adaptive robots like the ones that kill all the X-Men in Days of Future Past with giant bone saws for arms. Yeah.
And of course, they won't mind living up in Newcastle, which of course Jonathan Woodgate would normally be worried about.
Well, exactly, because they don't need food and they don't need jobs.
Yeah. And they can just be powered down when the game isn't on.
Exactly. And when they've destroyed all the opposition and won the quadruple kind of by default, you know, what then? This could be the start of the rise of the machines, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way elderly gentlemen like us are having a nice, gentle future where we all buzz around in little rocket cars like on the Jetsons.
No.
Sure. That's not
The thing that I read about the SoccerBot 360, which yeah. I will never get bored of saying SoccerBot 360. No, is that it's meant to help players learn spatial awareness. Okay.
Yes.
Now, I think another way to make these pampered professionals learn spatial awareness is send them shopping or put them on public transport or get them to play in the street.
Well, actually, the SoccerBot 360 is essentially a circular arena in which images can be screened on 8-foot-high walls by overhead projectors. And I'm presuming the 360 comes from the circular
yes.
design, or else it takes 5 days off a year, six in a leap year.
Yeah, yeah.
But it can be used for training drills with players trying to pass to moving targets that can be moved around. But the real step forward comes, as I say, from its capacity to use match analysis and simulations to improve spatial awareness. One thing that generation, the generation of current players, could learn about spatial awareness would be just look where you're bloody going. Don't stand on your fucking phone.
Yeah, well, no, exactly so.
But it would be possible. This is the incredible thing for me. It would be impossible to relive a fixture within the SoccerBot 360. Put a player in there and have them relive, see the pitch again from the same angles they saw on match day. And how the hell are they doing this? How is it possible to do this?
It's trickery. It's magic.
it's electrickery.
It's electrickery, as Catweasel would have said. Exactly. So, and I think what's going to take over from the SoccerBot 360, and I'll never get bored of saying it, is at Stoke, we're going to get the SoccerBot 365.
Oh, SoccerBet 365.
SoccerBet 365, in which people can go back in to betting shops and replace their bets in a virtual reality.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. I mean, Norwich, apparently, are the first team to take a punt on this. They've spunked 750 grand on it and built a special new building to stick it in. And they hope this will give them an edge. Because football's all about marginal gains now, isn't it? Developing players' mental acuity. The art of scanning, you know. Scanners, that was another one, wasn't it? Where everyone's head exploded. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
But what they mean is turning your head to form internal images of the pitch. Like they used to say, didn't they, about Bobby Moore. He always had a picture in his head of where everyone was at any moment, which, you know, possibly he was a robot sent from the future to change the result of the 1966 World Cup final, which we shouldn't rule that out. It'd be distressing, but we shouldn't rule it out.
Shouldn't rule it out.
Maybe the Germans won, maybe history was different.
And the other player who had a picture in his head all the time he played was Carlton Palmer, but it was one of those pictures like Homer has during The Simpsons.
of a donkey with flies circling
his head. Or a bear playing the cymbals.
Or the clockwork monkey.
Anyway, the great news is we've got our guests coming in at a moment, and who knows, it could be the Soccerbot 360. Our guest today is an esteemed geographer and comic. There's a phrase you don't get to say very often.
And despite knowing him,
not in that order, no. Yeah.
Thanks very much for that.
And despite knowing him for 40 years, I have no idea where his footballing loyalties lie. However, as a player, I know he modelled himself for many years on Klaus Augenthaler, the wonderful, imperious German centre-back. His TV and radio credits are legion, from the Ray Whitehouse Experience to Outnumbered, and his double act with Steve Punt is one of the most enduring in British comedy. Please welcome Hugh Dennis.
Hello there.
Hugh.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you.
Yeah.
I can't remember why Klaus Augenthaler.
I don't even remember it being
Yes. You used to come out from the back with the ball, you know, head up in that
sort of... I thought that was like Beckenbauer. I
remember you
used to... It's just a lot of syllables.
Years.
That's all it was.
No, you used to actually say, because Augenthaler.
Did I?
Yeah, you did.
I love a player who commentates on his own game while he's going.
Like Marco Tardelli.
Yes.
And famously, when he scored in the 1982 World Cup final, struck it home, ran towards the camera, and always wondered what he was saying, and he's actually saying, Tardelli! Like he's in his own back garden. It's a fantastic thing.
It's like Ewan McGregor making the noise on the lightsaber as well.
Yes,
it's... He can be told to stop.
Did he really? Yeah. He kept doing it.
Because going...
That'd be so tempting, wouldn't it?
Stop.
God, I just did a thing. You know the Indian film, the Lagan? There was a rather eccentric Indian guy who was in the Indian cricket team, obviously. And there was a big scene with all the cricket. It took a lot of setting up. Yeah. And there was a sound thing that they couldn't work out. What, like a buzzing happening in the background. Going on. They couldn't work out what it was, and they were unplugging things, plugging things in, kind of thing. And it was this bloke squatting on the ground in a big group, and they said, "Why are you making that noise?" And he said, "I was improvising, being bothered by a bee."
That's brilliant.
Now we're on to the subject. Yes. Bob Mills was briefly in his nascent career a Cyberman in Doctor Who, and he had to come in and burst through the door. And the Doctor was there, I think. Who would it have been at the time? Tom Baker, probably.
Yeah.
And then, because they've got the helmets on, obviously, and then at the end of the scene, they all had to freeze, and then they kept hearing, da-da-da-dum, 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 wah-wah! And it was Bob.
Bob doing the theme music.
Bob doing the theme music.
Sorry, man.
Oh, well, that's how time moves on. I've seen quite a lot of Bob Mills in the last year, because he's been walking his dog in the same wood.
I thought you meant...
We haven't moved into middle age.
Why dog walking gentlemen?
I thought you might have joined the armed forces, because Bob does a lot for our boys, you know.
Yeah.
He does. He absolutely does. Now we're going to get
The Augenthaler thing I'm interested in, though. I think I modelled it, mate, because I played a position that doesn't exist anymore, which is sweeper, which is a position which should exist.
Libero. Yes.
Yeah. And there was an Italian... Was he Italian? Scherer? Do you remember?
Scherer was a...
Gaetano Scherer.
He died in a car crash.
Did he?
Yes, he did.
Did it when?
Oh, long time ago.
I was going to say, what of? But clearly in a car crash. So,
So sweeper, yeah. Now, I remember, obviously, I've seen you on the field of combat, as it were. And and the single word that always sprung to my mind was erect. You were erect.
Am I? Even while playing?
As if you were enjoying it so much.
We've gone from Doctor Who to that. That's not right.
I mean, you know, upright is what I mean.
Yeah.
Obviously, what as you well I'm know, tall. Despite the faces that are being pulled.
Now,
high centre of gravity.
You have identified yourself as an Arsenal supporter. Have you always been an Arsenal?
No.
I didn't think so. Remember you being an Arsenal supporter.
So I had this rather kind of weird history of football sports. So where I grew up, on the Isle of Dogs, because my dad was a vicar of the Isle of Dogs. Yeah. There was a great danger. You had a choice between West Ham and Millwall. And if you... You know, it was a dangerous choice.
Yeah. You'll go for Charlton.
Seriously, down Charlton. So I decided at that point I wasn't really going to support anyone. I love football right from, you know, the time I could walk. I just played football all the time, but I didn't really bother to support anyone at all until Fred, my son, was born, which was like, you know, 25 years ago.
Right.
And then I started. Well, it was the first game I ever saw was Arsenal versus Swindon Town in the League Cup in 1971, something like that.
Swindon won the final.
It was not in the final. 67 or 69, one of those.
Yes, this was at Highbury. I remember not being able to see anything because it was so foggy.
So what?
Like the whole of the 1970s.
And it's quite an alien idea for Chris and I because you know we've been supporting our teams far too long, really, and it makes it actually quite painful. Do you find that that sort of liberates you from the having your whole weekend or summer ruined?
No, not at all now. Because there was a period about 4 or 5 years ago where the only weekends I enjoyed were when Arsenal were playing sort of on a Sunday, late on a Sunday afternoon, because then I could enjoy the weekend up to that point.
And
the worst time was the Saturday lunchtime kickoff, because I thought,
that's trashed the whole weekend. You must have had a good weekend last weekend, because they were on Monday night. Well, I went on Monday night to the Arsenal game.
Yeah, I know. Now they're bringing Friday night football back. That's the whole weekend ruined, isn't it?
Yeah. And they didn't play great, actually. I was there as well. You were there, weren't you?
Yes, that's right.
I was there. And it wasn't fantastic.
No, they were lucky to draw, I thought.
But you...
Well, I think given the fact they scored the goal with which they drew the game in the 95th minute, I think that's a fair comment.
But I think Palace were on top, but it was like they went to pieces from the 93.5th minute onwards.
Yeah, they did.
And then suddenly they just couldn't do anything for the last 90 seconds.
They just suckered us. They knew exactly what was going to happen. Yeah. They knew we'd give the ball away and then they would score.
Yeah. But also, in terms of playing, and obviously, I'm really jealous now because both you and Chris still play. And I, in a rather ridiculous fit of, I don't know what, idiocy, decided to give up when I was about 34. And I'm afraid.
Isn't this just because Steve Hodge gave up?
It is. Partly that. I felt it was the right age to give up, That's it now, lads. Well, legs have gone. When you've played at the very top level, you know what I mean? You don't want to be going back out there.
Yeah.
Obviously you end up playing with a lot of actors.
Because
you play at strange times of the day, which is great. When I used to play down at Battersea Park with all the actors, it was like a Friday at 11 o'clock
It was always comedians and waiters.
Because
waiters weren't working. Yeah.
And water carriers.
But you will have a memory of this, right? So when we went to the Edinburgh Festival in 1984, there was always a game, wasn't there, between Cambridge Footlights and the Mummers, who were serious.
We talked about these games the other week,
weren't they? Probably serious. And in one of those games, as I remember it, Steve Punt got his arm broken. Right? He broke his arm.
Yeah.
And in my head, it was broken by Simon Russell Beale. Now, I'm not sure. I don't think it can have been, because I don't think he, you know.
Was it broken so that Sylvester Stallone could go in goal?
That's a great thing.
I don't know.
The thing I always think about, and it's just not completely true, but it does happen occasionally, is when you play in actors' games and they'll go, not in the face! Not anywhere but in the face!
When they're standing in a defensive wall, and usually they'd be guarding the family jewels. They've all got their hands in front of the moneymakers.
I play with a colonic surgeon who won't go in goal because of his hands. He keeps on going, no! My hands are my living. I cut, you know.
My face is my living, I presume. It reminds me of the very embarrassing time for me, although I am a card-carrying coward, of being at Grimsby with Stoke, and it was, as they said in those days, it was going off all over the shop. Yeah. And some lads running up, saying, Bowie's getting battered in the concourse. And we were all meant to jump up and go down and help Bowie. Obviously, I'm a coward. And I said, and I regretted it the moment it came out of my mouth, I said, I've got filming tomorrow. And then for the rest, every time I saw those boys, it would always be, do you want a pint, Nick? Or maybe you've got filming tomorrow, I don't know. You know, are you going to drive? You've got filming tomorrow, maybe, I don't know. Such a regret.
You see, but my memory, again, of a show that we did at that same Edinburgh Festival was on the first night, which was a Saturday. You went to the first game of the season, which was Stoke versus... Well, it was in Luton.
It was Bradford, and I think I flew back from Leeds Bradford Airport.
Maybe it was. Yeah. But in my head, in the same way as it's Simon Russell Beale, it's Luton. And you drove all the way to Luton and then back again to Edinburgh.
Oh, yeah.
In time for the show.
Oh, man.
It's almost impossible.
We were doing a show, it would have been the year after. I was doing a show with our friend Rob Harley, who's a big Hearts fan, and Hearts obviously playing in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
But our show was at 4 PM.
Oh,
and
no.
Hearts were playing Hibs at 3 PM. And Rob went to the game and left at half time after, if I remember, taking with him half a bottle of whiskey and throwing the empty bottle at a policeman.
That's fantastic.
And I was in the. This show started with. I had to do a monologue at the start of a couple of minutes introductory thing, and then the first scene was me and Rob, and I remember very clearly Rob had stayed till half time, like 3:45, and the show started at 4, standing at the top of the stairs and seeing Rob kick in the fire door at the bottom of the stairs at 4:01, and dressed, you know, in his football match gear, and having to go on and do a 2-minute monologue in the trusting that he would then appear as himself and be able and he had that skill.
And here we are in a programme that says how much worse football has gotten. We've already talked about scrapping in Grimsby and throwing a half bottle of whiskey at a policeman. But there you go.
Well,
different days, son. Different days.
Yeah.
So Arsenal also, I mean, I saw this, did make me laugh quite a lot. There was a book that came out from Arsenal, which I have to say, I looked it up last night, down from £19.99 to £10 now, called Supporting Arsenal is a Funny Old Game.
Yeah, yeah.
An interview
That's right.
with a series of comedians who support Arsenal, which strikes me as a terrible idea, personally. but it was for comic relief, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it was for something. I can't remember, yeah.
It was a comic relief, yeah. But people will get this idea that you all go and sit together, you and Clive Anderson and Alan Davis and Matt Lucas.
Dara.
And Dara O'Brien.
Yeah, they're all there, but I never see any of them at all.
No.
No, there's no one in my section.
But it's just to torment
some of them are in club level.
Do you think?
You know,
In Anton Deck level.
Anton Deck level. I'm solidly there, upper tier, West End. You know, in the extraordinarily noisy and lively Arsenal crowd.
It's like a library, famously, isn't it?
Well, I went to a game at Arsenal when Stoke were in the Premier League all those many 2 years ago. One of the Stoke fans are going, "You're not proper supporters." He said, "Melvin Bragg supports Arsenal. He says half of us can't read." Somehow that was, you know, I've always thought they should sing "What is a Library" when people go.
That's also so. I see Robert Peston. I've seen Robert Peston more often than anyone else.
Really?
At Arsenal, yeah. He comes out looking very concerned.
He's a serious sort of a person, isn't he?
There's a lot on his shoulders, to be fair.
Now, we'll have to, because I only found this out last week.
Oh, no.
It shows how we've drifted apart.
Oh, no.
You were in the Bond film.
I'm in a Bond film, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but only for about 15 seconds.
Really?
And it only takes a second to score a goal. So
indeed.
So you've scored a massive hit.
I get shot in the head.
Oh, excellent.
How did that happen? Did they call you into audition, or did they just say?
No, they called me in, yeah. I went up to Pinewood,
yeah.
Found myself in with the director, and then got a call saying, do you fancy being shot in the head?
why haven't I? I have to we saw a thing that you'd written or been interviewed and had transcribed, where you described one of your big breaks as playing in a football tournament with Andy Hamilton.
Yeah,
and
no, I did,
ending
yeah.
up in outnumbered.
Yeah.
And I wondered whether you'd had to play football with Barbara Broccoli to get into the Bond film, because she's not a bad fullback.
Is she not bad? Yeah, it's got Italian skill set.
Yeah, exactly. She modelled herself on Shirea.
The best thing about a Bond film, actually, genuinely, was the day before, and my part in it is so tiny, and I get shot so quickly, and playing another in the selection of fairly weak men that I seem to specialise in. The day before, they take you to this thing in Pinewood that they refer to as the fighting shed. Right, you know that bit in Diamonds Are Forever where he goes into a ninja training camp, I think.
Yeah,
is that
oh,
Diamonds
yes,
Are Forever?
You Only Live Twice, he does.
Oh, is it Only Live Twice? Yeah, okay, yeah. So You Only Live Twice, and there's lots of kind of ninjas practicing. You walk into this fighting shit, it's roughly the same vibe. There are sort of, over in that far corner, there are sort of small explosions going off, and people kickboxing over here.
Oh, yeah,
and people sort of flying through glass.
There's that one, isn't there, in From Rush With Love, which is at Pinewood, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where Lottie Lenya gets led through where they're practicing with flamethrowers and things like that.
It's basically the same sort of thing as Rowan Atkinson in the Snickers advert.
Yeah.
When he falls through the roof. I mean, sorry, I don't go to the cinema as much as you two.
No, you don't. My sons, two of my sons have seen the book. I haven't seen it yet. Two of my sons, and they're very excited. They came out and said, you know, your mate's in it.
Okay.
And I said, oh, well, I'll look out for it. And they went, don't blink.
No, exactly. No, well, they're right. They are both right. But it just feels like one of those things no one can ever take away now.
Yes, no, absolutely.
I've got that. That's mine to keep now.
Yeah, yeah. And the other two was, of course,
Nicholas.
To link in with the Bond thing, of course, that could have been you, couldn't it? That could have been
Bond.
You.
What,
yeah,
as a
spy? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
not hoary old tale, but.
Hoary old tale, yeah. Did the interview.
Yeah.
The spying interview. It was a lot less exciting than I was hoping. I mean, in a way, you know, I wish it had been like
your,
the fighting
shit. Your job officer at the college. Was
career. Accountancy or
this.
Spying.
Yeah.
Have a word with Sergei over
there. But it was very odd. In fact, there were like three or four of us. And I think, as far as I remember, we all went down on the train together, sworn to secrecy.
Oh, what happened to that?
Not together.
Well, we sort of knew. We hadn't, I don't think we'd signed anything at that point, but we were sort of, you know, we felt it was a very important thing, and then it turned out.
Was it was this a stopping train or an intercity? I just wanted to know if you'd ordered red wine with your fish. Because that would, then you'd be out.
That should have told me something.
That should have told me something.
I don't think anyone was watching at that point.
Here's the thing I wanted to mention to you. I saw an old episode, because they're on all the time, of Mock the Week.
Yeah,
In
I
which
don't look any different, do I now?
No,
what
gloriously.
Year was it? What year was it? 2005.
No, it must be at least half a dozen years ago. I know, maybe older than that.
Yeah, what, the story that you were, gone now.
The story that you were doing was about Sepp Blatter having arranged to be elected unopposed as again as the president of FIFA, and it was your contention that his name sounded like a German person saying stepladder.
Yeah.
And which made me laugh a lot. But I wanted to tell you, when I was in Japan, when Nick and I were in Japan covering the 2002 World Cup, I remember seeing the opening ceremony, incredibly tedious thing, but I was stuck in my hotel room and it was almost football, nothing else to do. So I watched, and there were English subtitles translating the Japanese commentary, and some of the thing was in French as well. And it came up slightly behind what they were saying. And someone got up and introduced the speeches segment of the tedium, introduced Sepp Blatter. Okay, Sepp Blatter comes forward, starts talking. But the translating subtitles have stopped. They're a little behind, but then they pause, not able to cope with the name. And then finally it kind of shrugged and typed up, stepladder on the television. Yeah, exactly. That's what they heard.
My two favourite things about that trip on television was, one, as is Paul Scholes, and you should tell that story, Paul Scholes, because they interviewed each player and occasionally put up who their favourite players
were. Well, I forget which ones he was now, because he would do this interview from time to time, and where they'd say to Paul Scholes, who was your favourite player, who was your greatest influence, and they're expecting him to say Cantona or to say Brian Robson, and he would always say Frankie Bunn or Roger Palmer or Andy Ritchie, because he was an Oldham fan growing up.
Yeah.
And my other favourite thing, which was just a really bizarre thing, was they used to put a little package of goals every night, the goals of the day, and have some Western pop music behind it. And one night I was lying in my hotel room and up came the goals, and the song they played behind it was Enola Gay, which seems entirely
just really, really tactless.
It really was.
There was also, since you're an Arsene fan, I should mention this. Arsene Wenger did a lot of the Japanese television.
Well, because he was the manager of Grampus 8.
Yes,
or whatever
of
it was,
Gary Lineker's retirement home. Yeah. Of Grandpa's age.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we're already, by 2002, we'd known Arsene Wenger as a thing for like 4 or 5 years, as this professorial and rather dry figure. But the programme that he was on Japanese television, was like a knockabout slapstick show.
Like a Japanese programme.
Well, yeah. But what they did was, you know how the camera will always pick out attractive, particularly Brazilian girls, you know, and pick them out. They picked them up and put up a selection of them and asked Arsene Wenger which one he fancied the most. And imagine doing that to Arsene Wenger in this country. And Arsene Wenger smiled and picked one.
Did he? Yeah. That's fantastic.
This is the man who famously said, we all think that our wife is the most beautiful at home, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But in the studio, it was that Brazilian one.
So, you said also in an interview, I think it was the Radio Times, that you will watch nearly any game of football that crops up.
Yeah,
on
yeah,
television.
Yeah, yeah. This is so for years and years. You know, when because I had a sort of a normal job for a long time, and then, you know, do what we do. And I realised I was going to have a lot of free time, and I thought this is going to be terrible because if I get Sky Sports or if I get access to sport,
yeah,
I won't do anything at all. I would just watch sport all day. Yeah. So I resisted getting all those TV channels for years and years and years. And then finally I gave in completely. And it isn't just a football. It's like
it's a cricket.
Anything with a ball in it. Anything with a ball in it.
Yeah.
With the possible exclusion of some golf.
Yeah, no, good. That's
well, no,
good.
I got the Sky Sports things years ago and it ruined my life.
So, yeah, did it, you know, completely.
Yeah. Well, I remember Sky first started and I was sleeping on your floor, Chris, in a council flat in Streatham.
Yes,
and
right.
We found out that the England West Indies series was going to be on Sky Television. Well, of course, nobody had Sky Television.
Mm.
And we found out that the Holiday Inn in Croydon had Sky Television. So we booked a room and went to watch it, but they only had Sky One.
Oh, no.
There you go.
So what did he watch? You had to watch a sitcom or something.
I don't think they had very much on. But I'll tell you the honest
truth. Anything I won't watch, which does involve a ball, is when sometimes when I'm looking for the highlights and I kind of go through too fast and get the thing on YouTube, which is like the highlights but on FIFA. Do you ever watch that? Where they sort of, they've kind of recreated
them. Oh, they redo it.
They've recreated them as a computer game. And you think, what? What?
So
what's that for?
It's a bit like the Beatles cartoon or the Jackson 5 cartoon. What's the point in doing that?
But it's sort of immediate as well. You get really excited. I went on to see the Saka foul on Monday night because it was so far away in the ground that I couldn't see.
Oh, right. Yeah, the
red got
that.
Kicked by McCarthy. Yeah. So yeah, I thought, I'm going to find that. I'm going to see whether that was a red card really or not. And I got this sort of FIFA version of it. It's just bizarre.
And does the camera sort of swoops around it from all angles?
Yeah.
And does that
well,
thing?
And eventually, you know, what you'll be able to do is just press a button on your television and the Xbox 360 will come in and do it for you. They'll come and kick you like you are James McCarthy. Sorry, it wasn't McCarthy, it was Saka that was
there. Yeah, and it wasn't McCarthy, I don't think.
It was MacArthur.
He was the man who had the witch hunt against communists.
Yeah, and a park named after him.
Yeah, and the
Richard Harris song it sang about.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've been all over the place on that particular interview.
Yeah.
Thank you so much to Hugh. Could you please send emails if you want to into slopingpitch@gmail.com and subscribe to the podcast. That would be a lovely thing. And apparently, rate and review us. If you want, you can give the show 5 stars. Thank you all so much for listening and see you here next week.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.